I'm John Krall. Today on No Limits, we're going to talk about the problem of homelessness among the young. There's a new study in the works to count how many youth in our city are without homes, and we're going to discuss that. My guests are Alan Witchie, Executive Director of the Coalition for Homelessness Intervention and Prevention, otherwise known as CHIP, Miranda Warden, Director of Programs and Training of the Indiana Youth Group, and Eric Howard, Founder and Chief Executive Officer of Outreach. Please join the conversation. Call 866-476-3881, email nolimits@wfyi.org, Facebook is No Limits WFYI, Twitter is WFYI. Now, this news. Welcome to No Limits. I am John Krall, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of thestatehousefile.com, and your host. We're going to be talking about the homeless youth count today. We'll describe what that is and discuss it in detail. If you want to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi. Or on Twitter at WFYI. My guests are Alan Witchie. He is Executive Director of the Coalition for Homelessness Intervention and Prevention. No one ever calls it that. The name is really CHIP. Everyone refers to it as CHIP. Miranda Warden, who is Director of Programs and Training for the Indiana Youth Group, otherwise known as IYG. And Eric Howard, who is Founder and Chief Executive Officer of Outreach. I'd like to welcome all of you to the program.
Thank you.
Hope you and our listeners had a wonderful 4th of July, and it is good to be back here. So I'll tell you what, Alan, I'm going to start with you. Talk to me about what the youth count, homeless youth count is.
Sure. Every year, CHIP sponsors the point in time count, which has an unfortunate acronym of PIT. And we count that in January. Basically, what we do is we try to go out and find anyone who is homeless, sometimes in the shelters, sometimes under bridges or in camps. And that number sort of every year is something that we have included youth in. So when we go out, we don't discriminate on age or anything. But we have traditionally not captured as many youth as we think are out there. And we think there's also some fluctuation by maybe time of year. So maybe there's a growth in summer and a lower number in winter. And so since we do the traditional point in time count in January, we're doing something different this year. We're going to try in July, do a youth specific count and really try to find anyone who is 24 and under that is homeless and find out how many there really are in Indianapolis.
I'm going to ask a couple of kind of procedural questions here. Just one, how do you go about finding them? In part because, you know, a lot of the things people use when they're taking a census or doing whatever, homeless people by definition don't have. They don't have fixed addresses. Often they don't have phone numbers or any of the other mailing addresses, any way for you to easily track them down.
Yeah, so we find them in a few different places. One, we have a wonderful system of shelters here in town that offer crisis housing. It's really not housing. It's just overnight stays and food until permanent housing can be found. And so we go into the shelters. There are also camps. So people in the city live in very specific areas where we know, and they have you know, their own tents or their own shelters of some kind that they create. And so we look there. We also actually go out and, you know, search for places under bridges and parks and libraries and so on. And then there are some places that people will naturally hang out. For instance, Outreach Inc. is a great day center. And so we can find some youth that hang out in programs and other facilities in town and connect to them. And then this year we're doing something a little different. We're doing these magnet events, which basically are social events that are in some way designed to attract homeless youth that might otherwise be hiding out in abandoned homes or difficult to find in some way in order for us to count them. And those things are, you know, centered around, you know, arts like either arts or poetry or different types of activities that would be interesting to youth.
Last procedural question here real quickly, for now anyway. How are we defining homelessness?
So there are really two main definitions, and one is literal homelessness, which is you are out, you don't have a place to stay, so you're either on the street, in a shelter, in an abandoned home, in a vehicle. And then the second is doubled up, and that is when you've lost your home for some reason, but you are staying with a friend, a family member, you're couch surfing. And so those two different kinds of homelessness, we track them differently because depending on which one you fall into, you're eligible for certain types of assistance and other ones you're not.
Miranda, why is it important to count the number of homeless youth in this city?
Well, I think we have to see the problem before we can address it, right? And so if we don't have an accurate representation or picture of what youth homelessness looks like in Indianapolis, then how can we actually address it in a way that is coalition and community-based and minded? I think Pitt does that for us.
Eric, I am going to ask real quickly how homelessness obviously is a huge challenge for anyone. Are there specific challenges for young people, though, who are homeless?
Absolutely. I think when a young person finds themselves homeless, they're looking for a sense of community and belonging. Mm-hmm. So there's a sense of a lack of shelters, a chance of economic security, finding employment, being able to obtain the appropriate ID, whether that's a birth certificate, a state ID, a Social Security card, a lack of a stable address, transportation, access to education, that a lot of young people run into these barriers of where do they go. The commonalities are with the adult population is where do I take a shower? Where do I do my laundry? Where do I receive medical treatment or mental health support? Where do I collect mail? These are just barriers that a young person continually runs into when they are homeless. Not to mention they're just looking for community. They're still an adolescent, and I think if everyone remembers when they were a young person, a teenager, they were looking for that sense of belonging. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of the service providers that are here that are working with youth provide that in that context of what does it mean for a young person to come in, to be seen, to be known, to be valued. And in that process, trust is established. And in that process of trust, services can start to be rendered.
So, and I should say to our listeners, we're talking about the challenges faced by homeless youths and a new attempt to figure out just how many of them we have in this community. If you want to join this important conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or on Twitter at wfyi. So, Miranda, in terms of this, is it your sense? What do you think the numbers are going to reveal? Are the numbers of homeless youths growing in this community or staying static? Or do you have any sense?
I think Alan could speak to the history and whether or not youth experiencing homelessness is actually growing or not. I think one of the things that we at IYG and this community should be very interested in is the percentage of those youth who identify as LGBTQ. Mm-hmm. So we have national numbers saying that, and we know that LGBTQ youth make up about 7 to 10% of the youth population overall, and nationally of the homeless youth population make up 40%. It's been my hunch that once we start assessing that here in Indianapolis, that it will meet that, if not exceed that. And it seems like some of the results we're getting back from the needs assessment and Al and I were just talking about is indicating that. And so I think that is going to speak specifically, give us grave implications of what that means for service providers, community members, anyone who says they have a stake in ending youth homelessness, because that means we will need to serve these youth affirmingly and competently inside of their LGBTQ identity as well. And if we're not, then are we doing the work of ending youth homelessness?
And I'm going to ask this question because I'd like everybody's thoughts on it, but I'll stay with Miranda. Is it difficult to get young people to be forthcoming about some of this stuff? Because, again, I'm the only real understanding I have of that is, you know, once long time ago, having been an adolescent myself, and then as the father of two adolescent children now, I know that there are certain things, at least when I was that age, I would, you know, rather have walked through fire than talk with any adult about, that I considered intimate space or whatever. One of them, obviously, was my sexuality. The other, though, and without going into it, any domestic disturbance in my house or anything like that, I wasn't going to talk with anyone about. So that's why I'm asking this question, is it difficult to get, because these are sensitive subjects that we're asking young people to share with people, in some cases, they don't know that well. Is it difficult, Miranda?
At IYG, it's not. And I think that speaks to exactly what Eric was talking about in building community. At IYG, we're specifically building a community that sees and celebrates you and your wholeness. And that includes your LGBTQ identity. I think youth are way more perceptive and way more brilliant than we give them credit to. And they know very quickly. And I think to your point as well, you knew very quickly whether or not you could reveal certain things and be safe, right? Mm-hmm. And specifically youth experiencing homelessness, they are on the clock 24/7 and trying to realize what safety is and where they can find it. They're always trying to figure that out. And so we as service organizations, we are sending them that message when they walk in the door, before they even walk in the door, as to whether or not they can answer those questions and be safe inside of all of their identities. So because IYG is built on what we're built on, which is creating safe communities for LGBTQ youth, no, they're very forthcoming with all of their identities. And I think it's important as service providers and people in the community to make sure all of our spaces are creating that kind of safety.
But, and I'm not saying this to disparage or demean what you've said. Sure. To some degree, if they've walked through your door, they've already made a decision to be forthcoming about it. What I'm wondering is whether, and I'll throw this to Alan next, is whether there are kids out there who won't walk through the door, mm-hmm. who refuse to identify anything, won't throw up a hand and say, I need help.
Well, I think there are definitely people that are that have difficulty getting help. And it's interesting because in this point in time count that we're doing is part of a much larger needs assessment that we're working on this year, including surveys and really getting to the point of asking, you know, youth for their feedback and their ideas and where they're struggling and why. And we do see that a lot of times when we look at the adult population, that about one in four of them experienced homelessness when they were youth. And so we also then asked youth, like, how many people know about your homelessness? Do you talk to people? And frequently the answer is nobody knows, or we're nervous to tell people. So I do think that there are ways and safe places to come. I think both, you know, outreach and IYG provide safe environments for youth to come and talk about things that they might not have other places to go. But many of the youth under 18 are facing, they've been kicked out because they're LGBTQ, or they have a domestic violence situation at home, or they have a drug problem, or they have a drug problem in the house where they're escaping from. And those are really hard things. They are hard things sometimes to talk about. And so they go to safe places like Outreach and IYG to be able to talk about them.
Well, and I want to be clear, I'm not disparaging the work of organizations. Everything, though, I've ever read or reported about homelessness is it's like so many other things. The numbers we see of anything underestimate the scope of the problem, which is what I'm trying to get at.
I would agree with that for sure. And that's one of the reasons why we're trying to do the needs assessment, to get a better sense of where we are. We know, for instance, that in the high schools, there's quite a number of youth that are are in unstable housing, and they don't identify or connect to a lot of the service providers in any way because they're afraid. And when we've talked to those youth, they have told us that they either don't know how to get to programs. Oftentimes, they only hear about it from their friends, and they have incorrect information.
Eric, I would love to hear your thoughts on this, but we're running up on a break. So I'll give you a couple of seconds here to collect your thoughts, and then we'll come back, because I would like to talk a little bit more about how you get young people who might be resistant to be a little more forthcoming about the challenges in their lives. If you are just joining us, we are talking about the new homeless youth count. More specifically, or more generally, we're talking about the challenges of homelessness among the young in Indianapolis. My guests are Alan Witchie of CHIP, Miranda Warden of IYG, and Eric Howard, who is with Outreach. I am John Krall. You are listening to No Limits. If you want to join the conversation, you can call us at 866-476-3881 or send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Krall, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StatehouseFile.com, and your host. We're talking about the new homeless youth count here on No Limits. My guests are Alan Witchie. He's executive director of the Coalition for Homelessness Intervention and Prevention, otherwise known as CHIP. Miranda Warden, director of programs and training for the Indiana Youth Group, otherwise known as IYG. And Eric Howard, founder and CEO of Outreach, otherwise known as Outreach. Thanks.
You need an acronym.
Yeah, something there. So, Eric, before we went to the break, we were talking about really how, and what I was trying to do is set up the fact that whatever the numbers reveal out of this count, the problem is actually probably going to be larger than what the numbers will show, because there is a certain reticence about talking about some of this, identifying in many ways. How do you get the young people who come to you to feel comfortable? You know, it's important. And I heard Miranda's point about creating that safe space, that in that welcoming and, you know, secure space, so that young people, but that is something that is easier said than done, that there is effort that goes into making that happen. So first talk about how you go about getting people to let that wall down, and then how you create in that world. Miranda, I'd like your thoughts on how IYG creates that space too.
Sure. First of all, we have a dynamic team and incredible volunteers that greet and receive the youth that come in, and we strive very hard to know their name, their story, and what's going on with them, so that they are seen and that they are known, irregardless of how they came into it. And I think the other big thing is probably 70 to 75% of our current youth that come to us are from other homeless teens or youth that have gone through our services. So it's the greatest form of flattery that other homeless teens are saying, go in and see Outreach. They're providing food and clothing and taking a shower and access to transportation and identification needs, employment referrals, legal services. And so that is huge. And once they're in there, they're just seen. We want to know their story, what's going on in their life, and they feel safe. I think when we go to the school-based program, it's a little bit different, because a lot of our homeless high school students within our GOAL program are uncertain of what the laws are, and they're afraid to identify themselves as homeless. And so our case managers partner with the school districts, go in, help those social workers identify those kids to come forth and to say, hey, these are the services that you are entitled to that we can help you address. And I think it speaks volumes, at least to Outreach, that this was our largest graduating class. We had 36 of our youth that were homeless graduate. That represents 7 different academic institutions, 2 vocational, and going into the armed services. That's about trust. That's about engagement. That's about seeing them and knowing them the entire time. But it's heavily on the shoulders of our staff and the volunteers to simply greet them without judgment, to get to know them. It's you and I having a cup of coffee. It's you and I breaking bread together. It's you and I just sharing, cracking a joke. It's allowing them to share according to their comfortability, not what we're trying to extract from them for a survey or for data. If you want to stop, stop. Just tell us. And how do we partner with you?
Miranda.
Yeah, I would echo what he said about relationship building. I think relationship is everything. And so IYG has a center, and inside that center we have over 30 programs, support programs, and other services and such for youth who identify as LGBTQ and their straight allies. And I think specifically for LGBTQ-identified youth, things that we have found important in creating that safe space is signage. So, like, do you have some kind of symbol indicating you're a safe person or you're a safe space? The rainbow flag goes a long way. The trans flag goes a long way. And we have those, obviously, but we suggest that in trainings and such when we're training service providers and how to be competent in serving LGBTQ youth. At IYG, we ask name and pronouns every single day, every single pronoun, or every single group and program. And the reason for that being is that IYG is going to be a safe space where you're going to be able to explore your identity and what it means. You're going to be able to try on different hats with what it means for you with regard to gender, et cetera, et cetera. We have a huge gender expansive or gender diverse population, trans population at IYG. And IYG is going to be a safe space to express yourself that way, to be called the name that you want to be called and be referred to with the pronouns that you prefer. Many of our trans and gender nonconforming youth don't have that opportunity elsewhere, but they will always have that at IYG. And they'll be able to have those conversations with adults as well about what's hard about being trans in middle school or being trans in high school. And just having that trusted relationship, like Eric was talking about, is really key and paramount to the work that we do.
We are talking about the homeless youth count. More generally, we're talking about the challenges that homeless young people face here in Indianapolis and the scope of the problem of youth homelessness in our community. If you want to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. Send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or on Twitter at wfyi. So, Alan, Miranda cued you a little while ago and said that, you could talk about trends through time, but also she teased a little bit about some of the what the numbers might reveal. For example, the disparity between the total percentage of youth homelessness and, the disproportionate number of those youth who are LGBTQ. So first let's talk about the baseline. I mean, what information do we have about the numbers of homeless young people in our community now? Do we have a baseline of any kind that we can trust, or?
You know, we do have some good data, but it's what I would say is not complete data. Frequently we have kind of two main sources, and one is, the sort of point in time data that we have, or data that is collected throughout the year by service providers that go into a system that allow us to track outcomes. How well are we housing people? How many of them come back into homelessness and those kinds of things. It also tracks demographics and, services provided and those kinds of things. So it is interesting. I can say we definitely have seen a growth in homelessness and amongst youth. And I think, Eric, you mentioned earlier you had something like about a 15% increase in this year. Is that right?
Yeah, we're at a 15% increase over last year.
Yeah, so I think that individual providers are seeing that same trend that we're seeing across the city. And I would say, it has to do with a lot of issues. And one is obviously the opioid crisis has been problematic and has come a long way in terms of increasing the number of homelessness. But for young people, a lot of times it is the LGBTQ population. We're doing a needs assessment now, I alluded to earlier, but we don't have the final data yet. But really, the survey data is pretty compelling. When you look at people under 18, it is a majority of them that in the survey data that we saw that identify as something other than straight. And it's a really interesting thing. And once you get a little bit older, the population, it's still very disproportionate. So maybe when you're 20, in 20 to 24, it's 30%, but still very disproportionate. And then as you get younger, it gets, again, over 50% in the data that we're looking at right now. Obviously, it's really interesting, too, to think about different types of demographics. For instance, amongst young populations, young women are much more disproportionately affected than as an adult. So I can always look at the data from that perspective. We know that also the African Americans are much more disproportionately impacted by homelessness. And so if you're younger, you're far more likely to struggle with issues at home, like domestic violence, having a drug addiction problem in the home, maybe not yourself, or having a values mismatch with your family, meaning like, you know, you believe one thing and your family believes another and you can't reconcile that.
Which raises then the question, I want to get into causation with some of this stuff too, about why some of these numbers are disproportionate. You know, I think we can make some guesses, but we all know the saying about making assumptions too. So,
right.
So what sorts of questions are we going to be asking with this survey? What information are we hoping to glean from these young people that, and in what ways then will having that information help each of you serve them?
Well, you know, I mean, some of the things that we're trying to clarify or even from a community level, things that maybe, you know, Outreach or IYG already know from their client base. So they might know some of the stuff, but it's very hard to say, is it just the population that's coming into their organization or is there a broader issue that we're facing? So in some of the broader spectrum issues, we're seeing things like if you're homeless, it's very hard to understand how to get into post-secondary education because you don't necessarily have somebody helping you. You don't have the supports to do that. If you've experienced homelessness.
You don't have a guidance counselor.
Yeah, you don't. And you know, for a lot of people, that's really hard. And so they want to do that. Or if they're really trying to figure out how to get a job and how to keep the job, maybe somebody hasn't really taught them some of the basic skill sets to do that. And so they can go to one of the organizations here and learn some of that stuff and get some help on how to do that.
Eric, I'll throw this one to you next, but what information that you don't have right now would be most useful to you?
What information?
When you look at it and think, God, if I knew this, this problem would be a lot easier to solve.
I think what is unique is probably about 10 years ago, Outreach internally started to do our own point in time assessment. We both have a long and a short. And of that, that lended itself to some of the services and the programs that we currently offer. So we started to see more aggressive behaviors coming from our homeless females and what they were doing in order to survive, violent acts. And we experienced some of the youth telling us in these long and short surveys what was going on in the world. So we partnered with a mental health agency to come on site. And in that context of those relationships, they were able to access housing and employment and mental health needs in a more efficient and effective manner, which we saw better engagement and participation in their mental health services. It's the same thing that came about when we partnered with the Neighborhood Christian Legal Clinic to come on site and address some of the immediate legal barriers that these young people have. They don't know where to go, how to access them. And so those are some of those things that are our data slowly starts to reveal once we are able to look at the numbers to be able to come into it, to how do they access transportation? Do they understand how to get from point A to point B? Because it's not always the most effective way. It's how we engage social media. So a lot of our youth, although they are homeless, they have access to email. They have access to social media, and that's how they're communicating with some of our case managers. Any public Wi-Fi spot, you can get onto and you can assess what's going on, what do you need, and be able to tie in with one of our staff or our volunteers and say, I need some help. And we were able to check up and follow up on them. It's the role of the relationship. I don't know if you would agree. It's not just the services that we provide, which is almost the icing. I'm looking up right now. It's the context of relationship that leads to services. And I don't want to mislead people. The services are key. But outside, specifically with this population, if there's not an authentic relationship, the access to services is just a transition. there is not the success that we're looking for as far as an outcome. And it's the same reason when we do our FAFSA night and help our students access the federal aid. That's complicated. There mm-hmm. are parents that have kids that are stable, and it's difficult to walk through a FAFSA form. So we bring in other individuals, specifically a bank and its partners, and walk our youth mm-hmm. through that. It's difficult. I don't know what we don't know. I'm sure there are several things, but a lot of it we allow our youth to direct us in how do we better serve and partner with them.
Yeah, and I guess where I was going, Miranda, I'll throw the question to you too, is obviously if we knew completely how to solve this problem, there wouldn't be homeless people right now, but there are. Which I guess what I'm trying to get at is where is the piece that, or pieces, because it's making another assumption to assume that there's only one, but what are some critical pieces of information that would be helpful in allowing you to serve, your constituency, your population better?
Yeah, I think we need to find out where the cracks are, right? Yeah. So youth are homeless because they're involved in systems that have failed them. Many of our systems just simply are not built for them. I learned in grad school in social work that the most vulnerable population will always be children. So if you add homelessness on top of that, and an LGBTQ identity on top of that, on top of the already the most vulnerable population on this planet, look at how is that youth supposed to make it, right? And so I think that we need to find out as service providers, as community members, as people who want to end youth homelessness in Indiana, how are we perpetuating systems? We can't be another system that fails them. After their school has, their family has, their community, their faith community has, we can't be that too. So, and as Alan said about the people of color inside LGBTQ youth, mm-hmm. the most at risk to be homeless are Black and Latinx youth. And so how are we perpetuating racism inside of our own institutions, inside of our own organizations? And how are we intentionally trying to deconstruct that with one hand or uphold that with one hand and help them with the other? We cannot help a Black queer youth and uphold a racist system. We can't do it. So we have to look at the way that our systems as a whole are failing these youth in the attempt to address youth homelessness.
And I think it's really important.
Yeah, that brings us around that question of causation that I wanted to get. So yeah.
Oh, yeah, I was just going to say, one of the biggest problems we have in our community is we have a growing youth homelessness problem, but we don't have a growing resource to match it. Mm-hmm. And so we're seeing more and more youth, on the streets that are doubled up, that don't have a place to go. And yet once we've connected with them and built the relationship and developed them as Outreach and IYG do, there's not the resource always available to help them. And so, the failure sometimes in the system is the lack of resources. And we really have got to try better to get more resources to deal with the issue.
Do we know, because it sounds like at the resources have stayed static or even dipped slightly, while at least anecdotally and by observation, I heard Eric definitely saying he was up about 15%. Is IYG seeing about 15% more demand for services, 15% more people coming through the door?
Overall, our demand is increasing, yes. Specifically with regard to homelessness, hard to track inside of our population and something that we're working on. But yeah, the amount of youth coming to the center and accessing our services is increasing significantly.
In that range of, would you say 15% or more?
Yeah, in range.
Okay, so it's around that. So what we've seen here, at a time when at least the economic figures and all of that indicate, jobless numbers have gone down, all of that sort of stuff, is that we're seeing this problem expanding significantly by more than double digits. And I'll tell you what, that's a complicated question. And I want to take it after we take a short break. We're talking about homelessness among young people here in Indianapolis on No Limits today. My guests are Alan Witchie. He is Executive Director of the Coalition for Homelessness Intervention and Prevention. That's CHIP. Miranda Warden, Director of Programs and Training for the Indiana Youth Group. That's IYG. And Eric Howard, Founder and CEO of Outreach. If you want to join the conversation of Outreach, if you want to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881 or send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org or find us on social media. I'm John Kroll. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Kroll, Director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StateHouseFile.com, and your host. We're talking about homelessness among the young. The hook for this show is a new homeless youth count here in Indianapolis to determine both the size and the nature of the problem. My guests are Alan Witchie. He is Executive Director of the Coalition for Homelessness Intervention and Prevention, otherwise known as CHIP, Miranda Warden, Director of Programs and Training for IYG, the Indiana Youth Group, and Eric Howard, Founder and CEO of Outreach. Before we went to the break, Alan, we were ready to dive into the complicated question of causation about why some young people are more likely to be touched by homelessness than others, what the reasons are, and what we hope to find out of that. Miranda made a point that was sort of your springboard, that we need to look at the systems that have failed them.
And we saw this year in our regular point in time count also a 10% increase in the numbers. And we know that last year in 2016, there were over 12,000 homeless people in the city of Indianapolis, and then we had an additional 6,000 kids that were doubled up that didn't get counted in that number. So it's a very large number in Indianapolis, and the fact that those numbers are increasing make you wonder a lot. Why? What's happening that's different? Amongst youth, it's really hard because we know if you are in the foster care system, you are far more likely to end up homeless than if you're not. It's amongst youth, having that experience is one of the highest indicators that you'll end up homeless, even more so frequently than like a mental health issue or substance abuse issue. But keep in mind, obviously everyone's talking about the opioid crisis and how important that is, and that is critical and it is causing a growth. What we are seeing is, you know, real growth in homelessness among millennials and among boomers. In particular, the older generation that has more medically complicated issues and then the younger population. And so it's no surprise to me that either one of these guys would see a growth in homelessness, because that is clearly what the data is showing us. And we know that for younger populations, there's a big fear. I mean, if you're under 18, there's a fear of the police, there's a fear of foster care, there's a fear of going back to a home that might not be welcoming. And so we definitely saw that a lot in the data that would drive young people to try to stay homeless and to sometimes not to get connected to the systems that have failed them, because the systems will send them back to bad situations.
Which I think is where my question about how you get people to open up. There's a natural protectiveness, I think, if you have been failed again and again and again, to be wary about trusting anew. We are talking about homelessness among the young here on No Limits. If you want to join the conversation, you can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. You can find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi. Track us down on Twitter at WFYI. Or you can do what a listener named Luke has done and call us at 866-476-3881. Luke, welcome to the program.
Hi, John. How are you doing?
Doing fine. What's on your mind?
Well, I was actually curious about this conversation myself because I was on the verge of homelessness at one point in time. However, luckily, I have a very loving and caring family to help me through my financial difficulties. So my question is, do you think that there is any correlation between a minimum wage and a rise in youth homelessness in Indianapolis? I'm aware that the minimum wage to at least pay for rent in Indianapolis is a $9.50, and a lot of those jobs that low-skill workers have don't even have that wage to make up for that financial issue that they're having. So I was wondering if you folks thought at all that maybe a slight rise in the minimum wage would help combat homelessness, or would it encourage homelessness?
Thanks very much for the call and the question, Luke. Miranda, I saw you nodding your head up and down, so I'm going to go with you on that one.
I'm nodding because I'm agreeing really hard. yeah, I think that when we think about the components and the facets and the ways in which to end youth homelessness, it cannot be, as Eric was saying, more services. It cannot be one relationship to one youth. It has to be a multifaceted, multi-component approach. And that has to also include advocacy for legislation that's going to, we can help youth get help them with interview skills, help them with application skills, help them build resumes. But if they get a job where they're getting $8 an hour, they're still not going to be able to sustain. So in addressing youth homelessness and solving it, we're going to have to do some advocacy work as well. So I agree.
So I want to do the springboard because I think this is getting to the meat of this question. And we'll use Miranda's point here about the systems failing. How are the systems failing? What have we seen? What evidence do we have so far that of the ways that the systems fail these young people? Eric, I'm going to start with you on that.
I think we initially ask that question. I look at some of the foster care youth or former foster care youth that have come in through our doors, and because of how that system has failed them for self-sufficiency and life skills, mm-hmm. they want nothing else to do with the system. That has already let them down. So for them to re-engage is extremely difficult. Even if there are sometimes dollars attached to it, they want nothing to do. They grew up in the system or another situation. Maybe that was through the court, and they've experienced trauma in the midst of that, lacking the life skills, lacking the employment skills to maintain that job, to remove themselves from a homeless situation. So that's just one of the ways that there's not the focus on the life skills that are necessary for self-sufficiency in our society.
I also think caller really maybe hit the nail on the head about not minimum wage, but a living wage. Like, what does it take in order to live and sustain your life? In Indianapolis, we know like 80% of people who become homeless are homeless for the first time every year. And generally, that is about not having a good living wage in this city. People have a very hard time surviving on what they're making. We know a lot of working poor who are struggling. And if you're young, you are at the bottom of the heap in terms of trying to get these jobs. I mean, you are competing with people that have had years of experience and oftentimes for a job that's not going to pay the bills. And so it puts them in a very complicated, difficult situation to survive. And there's a lot of judgment that goes into being homeless. People make a lot of biased decisions about your inability to survive, and oftentimes it really is about being able to get a stable income to survive.
When it's the transportation to that job. Yeah. It's the ability to clean a uniform. It's the ability to, where are you going to stay to take a shower? And I think it was very real to me when one of our young people one time challenged me when he said, I can get a job at McDonald's, but you can smell me. Do you really want me serving your shake and fries? And if a young person is working a third shift and they have to show back up, where do they clean that uniform the next morning? Where do they clean up? And so it's not just getting a job, but it is a job that is sustainable. Mm-hmm. Where do they clean up? How do they manage those finances? If you are 18 or 19, can you sign a lease? Mm-hmm. Can you get in there? Do you have the life skills? Can you get utilities in your name if by chance, because of family dysfunction, a parent, a guardian ran up your utility bills under your Social Security number, and so now you're 19, you just got your first apartment, and you discovered to turn on utilities, and you have a $500 or $600 bill. You would think that would be very simple to clean up. Mm-hmm. Frequently, it is not.
Mm-hmm. We've gotten a question from a listener who didn't want to go on the air, and this one's probably my fault. I was remiss in not asking this question. Asked if we can clarify what doubling up means in terms of difficulties counting. Alan?
Sure. Well, doubling up generally means that you've either left your home, you've been evicted, you lost your home in some reason, some way, and you are now living with somebody else. It could be a friend, it could be a family member, an aunt, an uncle, a neighbor. And so you're living in a place that's not your home. You don't have your name on the lease, and you're probably not going to stay there on an ongoing basis. But you ended up there because you really lost your primary residence. And so sometimes it's called couch surfing because you're sleeping on somebody's couch, a different person's couch every night. It's kind of like surfing from one couch to the next to the next. Sometimes it's just called doubling up because we have families or groups living together in places that aren't meant for that number of people. So that's the doubling up name.
Miranda, before we go on, I wanted to ask that same question of you. In your work, how do you see the systems failing most often?
Everywhere. So I think we have to look at systems at large, right? So we know that people of color, there are barriers after barriers for people of color to become employed, to stay employed, to get housing, to sustain housing, et cetera, because the system is simply built to put up those barriers, to keep people of color from surviving and thriving. The systems at large are built to keep LGBTQ folks from surviving and thriving for all the ways mentioned and not mentioned. And so because the systems are built that way, are built so that people of color and LGBTQ folks cannot survive and thrive, that is going to affect youth all the more. And this system specifically built for youth, that is also going to be true inside of those as well, which is why youth of color and LGBTQ youth have disproportionate rates in foster care, in the juvenile system, literally every other system built. So I think we have to look at systematic racism and systematic transphobia and homophobia, et cetera, and then own the fact that because these systems are in place to keep these populations of folks down, that's going to hurt children the most.
We are talking about homelessness, particularly among the young here in Indianapolis. There's a new attempt to figure out how many young people are affected by homelessness and the nature of their homelessness. If you want to join the conversation, you can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi. Track us down on Twitter at WFYI. Or you can do what Douglas has done and give us a call at 866-476-3881. Douglas, welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me.
Certainly.
Just a quick question. Good job, Alan and Eric. It's always been a pleasure to work with you in the community. And good to see you doing good work. But can you talk a little bit about the how felonies have affected the young people, especially around housing, getting to that next level of getting off the street? Thank you. I'll take my hand.
Thanks very
here.
Much. Thanks very much for the call, Douglas. Eric, I'll throw that one to you first.
Absolutely. Frequently, when there's housing available, if you have a felony conviction, you're not going to be – it's simple as that. You're not going to be able to get the lease.
Mm-hmm.
Specifically, if it's a violent felony, you're not going to be able to access that moving into it. So that is a barrier to stability right there. It's as simple as that.
How many other catch-22 situations do we have like that where someone literally, you know, I'm trying to think of a better way to use this, but, you know, in effect, they've fallen down. And, you know, the moral judgment is everybody is telling him, get up, pick yourself back up, pick yourself back up. But all of the ways that all of the handholds that they might have to lift themselves back up have been taken away. How many of those situations, felony or what are the other circumstances?
Inconsistent work history. So there's an underground economy, and it doesn't necessarily mean a legal economy, illegal in the sense that you're not paying taxes on it, but you don't have that work history that's in mm-hmm. place that's able to be documented. And because you can't document that wherever you're going to be housed, you can say, I can make this rent, but how do you prove that you actually have that income when you don't have a pay stub? How do you prove that you are a changed person even with a felony conviction? How do you prove transportation or identity when you go to the BMV to get into those places so you can go from a job to your place? How do you maneuver in the community? So there are some double jeopardy things definitely out there.
And I think also addiction and mental health are key issues. So, you know, if you have an active addiction and you're trying to work on it, it becomes very difficult to keep you housed. And if you've, oftentimes, eviction background will be another one. So if you've had ongoing evictions for one reason or another, and now you've got yourself together and you can have a stable living, you might still not be able to get housing. You know, and then and stable income, obviously all those things make it incredibly hard, felony being the number one difficult.
Well, we've experienced where youth become stable in housing and the sense of guilt. Now that they are stable, they will become the next place that other homeless teens can come into because they want to be able to help out their immediate community. What will happen then is that becomes the next party house or the next situational that numerous youth, and then they break their lease. And once that lease is broken, they now have an eviction on their record. And so the ability for them to find stable housing is that much more difficult because they have an eviction on that record when ultimately they are trying to help someone else that was homeless.
What are some of the other rabbit holes or chutes that people fall down, Miranda?
Well, I think, too, as those of us trying to address homelessness specifically, sometimes we will have requirements in place with good intentions that then become barriers to even accessing those services. So if we say, like, you must have a job within so much time in order to stay in this transitional housing or this crisis housing, but as stated, if you're a person of color, if you are an LGBTQ person, if you're a youth, and then if you're all of those things, it's going to be harder to find a job. And so are we taking into consideration that person and environment approach when we, even as service providers, are, again, I think we have good intentions with these requirements. We're trying to say it's important to you to have a sense of urgency around employment, around education, but sometimes in providing those requirements, we're actually putting up barriers.
I mean, that can be a difficult dynamic too, because
absolutely
you don't want to be played yourself. I mean,
right.
I have limited experience with homelessness, but a lot of experience with college students. So you want to help, but also you don't want to be taken advantage of or have the system taken advantage of. So when do we expect to have the results on this?
Well, next week we are doing the youth point in time count. So we'll have the results in a matter of weeks after that in a report to be able to share the youth, the sort of the broader youth needs assessment in which this will be part of, will be happening over the next few months. And so we'll have that by the fall for sure.
Does it require an awful lot of analysis, or is it something that's easily compiled?
Well, I think it does. When we do quite a number of surveys from youth at various different providers, and we have, you know, 10 different providers conducting surveys with their youth, we usually work with a public policy institute at IUPUI to help us, you know, as having a genuine evaluator to look at the data and help us understand what are real trends, which are things that might not be, or what might be particular to outreach youth versus IYG youth, and looking at something different. So it's helpful to have somebody on.
Real quickly, we've only got about 30 seconds left. What do you most want to learn from this count, Miranda?
Gaps in services.
Gaps in services, Eric.
Absolutely, gaps in services.
Okay.
So I think for me, I most want to know if we're seeing an influx in the summertime that's different than the wintertime.
We didn't even talk about, you know, whether this is seasonal or not, which is, I suppose, a reason that we have to have you all back again to talk about these numbers once
that's
they
right.
are.
That's right. We'll come back.
And what we have learned from it. I'd like to thank my guests, Alan Witchie of CHIP, Miranda Warden of IYG, and Eric Howard of Outreach for what has been a very lively and informative conversation about the problem of homelessness among the youth in our community. I'd also like to thank our listeners for being here with us. I am John Kroll. You have been listening to No Limits. Thank you for joining us.
No Limits is a production of 90.1 WFYI Public Radio, Indianapolis. Producer, Shannon Cagle. Interactive Media Coordinator, Scott McAllister. Technical Producers, Cedric Freeman and Chris Flood. And Board Engineer, Joe Hatcher. No Limits is made available through IPBS, Indiana's public broadcasting stations.